welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast. On the panel today, we have Kartik Krishnayar. My name is Christopher Harris. Now, Kartik, we're going to look at the past, present, and future, talking about soccer television coverage and streaming coverage on this podcast. If we go back into the past, this is something I did this past weekend, and I was looking at, okay, how many podcast episodes have we released? And we've had different incarnations of this podcast. It started off as an interview show and then morphed into a Premier League kind of review and preview show. Then I think it morphed back into interviews, and then it morphed into kind of a discussion of world soccer just in general. And the latest incarnation, which has been running now for about 3 years, is focused on the soccer media business. But if we take all of those episodes together, this episode right here is episode 1,396.
Oh, wow.
So, and this is like, I think our 16th year, or actually, 16th year of doing the podcast. So we started when we were like mere teenagers, or at least it seemed that way, I wish. But 1,396, coming up to 1,400 before you know it. Kartik, does that make you feel old?
Yes, without question. I mean, I can still remember the infancy of this podcast and listening to an interview with Phil Shane while I was driving across the Sunshine Skyway Bridge over Tampa Bay between St. Petersburg and Bradenton, previewing the 2006 UEFA Champions League final between Barcelona and Arsenal. Yes, this podcast has been running that long.
Wow, wow. What a game that was. So, if we look at, so that's the past, the present, Kartik. Well, present, we'll get into it a little bit. We've got some news and streaming information and looking into the future too. But from what we've watched this past week, it's interesting because I'm not going to go into a ton of detail here. But for my family, so my wife and my youngest daughter especially, those two have probably watched more Peacock this week than they've ever done. They're watching the Winter Olympics, and I'm trying to catch it as much as I can. They're hooked on the figure skating, but the UI, the user interface, and just the way that Peacock works for the Winter Olympics is so much better than what it was for the Summer Olympics. So I have two fans in my house who are Peacock fans. Kartik, I know you're into many sports from around the world. You're very, very, very busy. Have you had a chance to watch any of the Winter Olympics?
No, I haven't watched a minute of it, and I actually have no plans to because of where it's being held. But I probably would have checked it out otherwise, but truthfully wouldn't have watched much.
It's interesting, too, watching this, too, because some of the people on the, even on the broadcast side, you got Rebecca Lowe, who's the daytime host, and I was watching it the other night too, and there's Ahmed Farid. So there's some familiar faces. Rebecca Lowe's done a really good job of really breaking down the sports that are a little bit confusing or a little bit confusing to the mass media or mass audience, and explaining it in a way that is not condescending, but talks about the sport and helps the viewer understand the sport better. And I kind of look at that and say, okay, that's the same thing she did for the Premier League too, since 2013, is she didn't dumb it down, but she definitely spoke to the audience and educated them as well, at the same time as really kind of informing those people who already were hardcore soccer fans. So it's interesting watching Rebecca Lowe in action there on the Winter Olympics. So no Winter Olympics, Kartik, but have you watched anything else that stood out from this past week?
Yeah, I watched, obviously, Peacock and USA Network for the Premier League. I watched a lot of Championship and FA Cup, et cetera, this past week, as to be expected. Some Serie A as well, and Bundesliga. And by the way, so on the Bundesliga, wanted to point out, this is interesting. So Dortmund is playing Leverkusen simultaneously to Barcelona playing Atleti in La Liga. We know ESPN's priority of late has been La Liga. So they do the full ESPN FC treatment for the La Liga match. Kay Murray, who had, by the way, she was great all weekend long. Craig Burley in studio, the usual thing. for the Bundesliga, Taylor Twellman, who, by the way, he had a long weekend, right? He called two FA Cup matches, both of which went to extra time, or was the co-commentator with John Champion on those. And then this Leverkusen-Dortmund clash with paired with Derek Ray. They had Archie Rintott and Jan Agafjord at halftime on the pitch giving analysis and kind of feeding off of one another. I'm talking about, obviously, the Bundesliga match. And I really like that because I like both those guys' insights. They're both really good studio pundits. And even though they didn't have a host with them, they were able to kind of wrap off one another really well. And it's something I've never seen ESPN do, but I think they did it out of necessity because their studio, hosted by Kay Murray with Craig Burley, was occupied with La Liga. So even though it's clear like Bundesliga is the second priority, Chris, they did an actually credible job of keeping someone like me entertained and not channel surfing, because those, like I said, those are two guys I like, and I wanted to hear their insights and their thoughts. And then the other, I think, takeaway was that the USA Network halftime on both Tuesday and Wednesday, which was hosted by Arlo White, were from the Super Bowl, right? Which I don't. They could go there Friday, right? I mean, I'm sure this weekend it makes sense for them to be there, but I don't know why they're there Tuesday and Wednesday of midweek action. We're taping this Thursday morning, Eastern time. I'm assuming for the Leicester-Liverpool match, they will be there as well. So I'm not sure I like that. It was fine, right? I think Arlo is very good as a presenter, and that's the right call for NBC to bring him in, while Rebecca Lowe and Ahmed Farid and presumably Paul Burmeister also are away on Olympic duty. But I don't like the fact that they're at the Super Bowl on a Tuesday, 5 days before the Super Bowl. It's almost like between everything being bumped to Peacock and then this, the Premier League is playing major second fiddle this week on NBC networks.
Yeah, NBC is like the masters of cross-promotion, and this is just another example of them trying to cross-promote. However, I don't think it's actually working so far midweek. I'm sure by the weekend it'll be different. But like for Tuesday and Wednesday, I tuned in to watch the games, and I think I was watching the games on Peacock. But there was no a pre-game, there was no halftime, there was no post-match. So I didn't see Arlo and the two Robbies on the Tuesday games or the Wednesday games. And also, too, it's difficult, but too, because some of the kickoff times that start in the Premier League on Peacock are 2:45 Eastern time. And then the game that Arlo would have been doing some of the pregame for was for 3:00 Eastern time. However, with it being USA Network, you're not having half an hour or 45 minutes of pregame. Sometimes you have 30 seconds, or sometimes you have a best 15 minutes. And it's going to be interesting too, because this weekend also almost all the games, from Wednesday through till Sunday this week, out of the 15 games, 12 of them are exclusive to Peacock on the English language side. So most of the games are on Peacock, and that's the thing that still is clunky, is the whole Peacock experience, because when I'm tuning in to watch Peacock, I'm expecting also to have pre-game coverage, halftime coverage, and post-game coverage. And when you watch it on television, such on USA Network, it's seamless, right? It's like you don't have to kind of figure out which you mean, you just sit back and enjoy it. So this to me is an example of that, where it's not perfect. I mean, and the way that they have it set up is very clunky. And let me see, anything else from this past week? I would say actually one more thing about Peacock too. It's amazing, actually, if you've watched any game on Peacock in the past week since the Winter Olympics has started, as soon as the game is over, so full-time whistle, and within 10 seconds, they're flipping to the, you get the Olympic coverage. So they kind of redirect you to Olympic coverage, even if you don't touch the remote or anything.
It happened to me, and I was really frustrated by it, and then thought that I had hit the wrong button, was blaming my Apple TV box, tried to exit out, exited back into the stream, thinking there would be some post-game, and it was the Olympics again.
Right, exactly. So I'm sure that's helping them as far as the number of views and helping to try to push more people into, no matter what they're watching, if they're watching rugby on Peacock or soccer or whatever, to push them into watching the Olympics. And I'm sure some people stick with it and go like, hey, this is pretty entertaining. And that it is. All right, Kartik, looking to the future now. All right, what about matches to watch this weekend? What's your recommendation?
And actually,
last week's recommendation was top notch, Kartik. You had Nottingham Forest against Leicester, and what a game that was.
Yeah, I'm sticking with Forest again because what a game that was, and they continue to play well. They're now in the top six under Steve Cooper, manager you're very familiar with. He's taken them from being a relegation fighter to a top six side. They host Bournemouth, who now are back in second under Scott Parker, but to me just don't look a good side. They've spent a ton of money on bringing in reinforcements. This is Friday, 2:45 p.m. Eastern time on ESPN Plus, the championship. Every season it's great, but this season in particular, it seems like it's really, really top-notch.
Yeah, it is, absolutely. I don't think I've seen any bad teams in the championship this season. You could argue that Wickham Wanderers last season were just kind of basically in over their heads and played some entertaining football at times. But Bournemouth against Forest. Bournemouth, Swansea have played against them, and they're, if you look at their squad, and Bournemouth, you have to remember too, last weekend lost in the FA Cup to Boreham Wood. But Bournemouth, if you look at their squads and the caliber of players, it's better than most Premier League teams in the bottom half. They've got a stronger squad than Burnley. They've got a stronger squad than Norwich. And you can go down the list. There's probably a bunch of other teams, too, that they have a stronger squad. They've got some really good players. Yes, they're misfiring. Forest is just flying, which is so, so depressing for me, having Steve Cooper, former Swansea manager, now managing Nottingham Forest, doing so, so well there while Swansea's having some tough times in the championship and probably end up mid-table by the end of the season. But yeah, absolutely. This is certainly a must-watch game, Friday, 2:45 Eastern time on ESPN+. My recommendation, Kartik, is a little bit different. It's Palmeiras against Chelsea in the FIFA Club World Cup final, which is going to be played on Saturday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern on FS2 and Fox Deportes. Watching Palmeiras in the semi-final of this competition, they've got a ton of fans. They've traveled from Brazil to Abu Dhabi to watch this game. Really, really intense fandom. And they've got the Chelsea fans too. A lot of Chelsea fans have come from London and probably across Europe to watch this game. Palmeiras seem both on the pitch and off the pitch. They are in it to win it. They are kind of full-blooded. This means a lot to them. And for Chelsea, they're definitely in it to win it, of course. It's another piece of silverware. But I don't think the enthusiasm is there as much as it is for Palmeiras. This should be a really entertaining game from both sides. Kartik, kind of in the history of this competition, which has taken many different forms over the last several decades, actually a few decades, used to be the Toyota Cup, used to be the Intercontinental Cup, used to be, probably a whole bunch of other cup names. But effectively, it's the Club World Cup that we have today, kind of even the top teams from each of the confederations around the world on a club soccer basis playing against each other. What would you say is the level of interest in South America compared to Europe in winning this?
Oh, it's much higher in South America, and it's a much bigger deal. Actually, I would say international football is a much bigger deal in South America also, as is this sort of intercontinental competition at the club level. And the thing that will be very interesting is when FIFA launches, now presumably 2025, the enlarged summer edition of the Club World Cup, how seriously that's covered in Europe with more than one participant, and how much more seriously clubs push to qualify for that tournament from Europe.
From my experience too, it's been the same thing too, Kartik. So Palmeiras or South American clubs, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being just out of this world, wanting to win this competition, it's a 10 out of 10 for Palmeiras. For Chelsea and Chelsea supporters, I'd imagine it's probably, those based in the UK, it's probably maybe a 4 out of 10. It's not that important, doesn't mean that much. But to many South Americans, it means the world. It means you can be champions of the world. It means that you have a convincing argument that you are the best club soccer team in the world. For Chelsea, coming at a difficult time in terms of the season, right? Palmeiras is probably getting ready to be playing in the Brazilian league, but they've got a bit of a break. Chelsea doesn't. But yeah, should be interesting. So far, up until this point, Fox Sports 2 has had the world feed. It'll be interesting to see if they have one of their own commentators calling this game, because it is going to be a big one. Saturday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern. Kantik TV streaming news now, and some interesting developments. I'll have you start it off.
Yeah, so UEFA, with Champions League rights, have sold to what we would call agencies or third parties, and that sale has produced two winners. Now, interestingly enough, the U.S. has been split from that, and Relevant Sports has bought the U.S. rights as the agency, the brokerage agency, if you will. And this is really kind of a huge development. And you have to think, Chris, that Relevant, having seen how much CBS paid for it last time, right, and how Turner tried to match that bid. You know, Turner ended up bidding more in a losing effort than they did in a winning effort a couple of years earlier, that, and plus this being a 3-year cycle, they see an opportunity and probably have already felt out, I don't know, NBC, ESPN, Fox, about Turner again, maybe about competing with CBS. And they think this is going to be a very lucrative and profitable business for them.
Yeah, it's important to note here too, Kartik, and you did a really good job of that. But just to add to that is that it's not that Relevant has the rights to broadcast the UEFA Champions League, but they've bought the rights to sell it. So, for example, with La Liga recently, Relevant had bought the rights to sell La Liga and offer it to ESPN, to beIN Sports, to whoever, other types of broadcasters. And with this one, with the UEFA Champions League, now once the deal is up with CBS Sports, that will be coming up for bid. And then Relevant will be shopping that around to try to sell it on behalf of UEFA. So it's interesting developments, because Relevant, when they got the rights to La Liga and said, okay, we're going to go ahead and sell this now to the highest bidder, Relevant promised that they would sell the rights for, I think it was like $2 billion, and actually in North America, and they came through and actually got more money for those rights for La Liga than they promised. So they did a huge coup there. Michael, one of our listeners, and posted this on our comment thread here for the podcast. Michael says, which Relevant owns International Champions Cup. That's their tournament. That's what they're best known for. But recently, with the sale of La Liga rights in the US and North America, they're looking good. And they're more in the media rights business than they are in the International Champions Cup. So, and Relevant is owned by the Miami Dolphins owner, Stephen Ross, billionaire. Michael says, one of our listeners says, Stephen Ross is a smart businessman. If he says he can guarantee $250 million for UEFA with these rights, that tells you he must have already have received confirmation from ESPN that they are willing to bid that. ESPN had money budgeted for the Premier League, and when that didn't go through, that money is still budgeted. Also serves notice to CBS Viacom what the bidding will be starting at. CBS needs to decide if they are going to match that bid, or, as they did with the Premier League bid, work with ESPN to split the rights. Now, we have no way at this point in time of knowing whether or not that is true or not, but it's certainly a good assumption that, I mean, imagine if you're ESPN, or ESPN Plus, or Paramount Plus, or any of these streaming providers, or TV networks. I mean, the Champions League is the league. It's the top dog in many ways in terms of club soccer. It's bigger than the FIFA Club World Cup. It's bigger than Copa Libertadores. It's bigger than the League's Cup. It's the kind of the crown jewel there. And in the United States, you know, whether it's games on Univision, in Spanish, or CBS, as we'll see next week on over-the-air television. You mean, you've got the biggest teams in the world, the best players in the world competing. So it's quite possible that Relevant will be able to guarantee and hit that number, maybe even exceed it. And it is interesting developments that worldwide, UEFA did a deal with another agency except for the United States. And the United States was the only one that was different, and Relevant bought those rights and will then try to sell those rights to the next bidder. And the Champions League is up, what, Kartik? Was it next season or the season after?
This would be, I believe, the first season, actually, of CBS's deal.
Right.
The actual first season. So it would be up after two more seasons.
Yeah, and usually kind of that middle season, so next season, is kind of when those discussions start. And sometimes those deals are done mid-season of that second season, which is the 2022-2023 season. So by the end of the year, we might be getting closer to knowing whether CBS has renewed those rights or whether it's going to be ESPN or somebody else that picks those up. Huge story there, Kartik. One story, too, that we've talked about in the past, just to mention real briefly, and that's WarnerMedia Discovery. Their merger has gotten the green light from the U.S. Regulatory approval. So that is going ahead.
I should mention it's kind of gotten the green light, right? The time to object has expired, so it's going ahead on a technicality, but it wasn't actually formally signed off on. However, it goes ahead, right? Legally, it works the same way.
Right, exactly. So perfect timing for Major League Soccer, too. So if WarnerMedia, as you've written about, Kartik, on the worldsoccertalk.com website, extremely interested in getting rights to MLS, and then the merger with Discovery, which Discovery in the US most of us think of as kind of a National Geographic type of channel, or kind of more of a science type of channel, but owns Eurosport in Europe, and is actually a major broadcaster, especially in Europe and the US, of course. I think they own BBC America too. I think they do. But a huge company also. Now, actually, Discovery is doing so well, as is WarnerMedia. So this is going to be a real push, a real heavy hitter trying to get those MLS rights. And there's no guarantee that they'll get them, but they've certainly got a really good chance of being a major player there. All right, Kartik, speaking of Major League Soccer, just real fast, too, it's this weekend will be 2 weeks away from the start of the MLS season. I wanted to ask you, too, as far as burning the candle at both ends, right? So you and I, and probably a lot of listeners, watch a lot of games in the early hours of the morning. So whether it's Championship, Serie A, if it's the Premier League, of course, French League, Belgian League, oftentimes, a lot of us are getting up early to watch games. Sometimes we're getting up early to watch a U.S. men's national team player playing in Belgium or in Italy or in Spain or especially around Europe too. Major League Soccer games, of course, played in the United States, oftentimes kind of in the evenings. Sometimes kickoffs at 10 p.m. Eastern. Games not ending till after midnight. How do you feel about burning the candle at both ends? You mean, is it doable, and is it worth it?
It's certainly doable if you're of a certain age. I'm beyond that age now. Is it worth it? That's up to everyone involved. I mean, I think it's tough to watch soccer all day, right? It's really difficult to do it all day in front of a television. It was really difficult back in the days when I worked in American soccer to watch matches in the morning from Europe and then have to leave the house 3:30, whatever, set up and be kind of in the soccer thing till 10:30, 11. Somehow I did it. But it's difficult, and I think the thing we also found was MLS, when they did the MLS's back tournament, they seemed to do better ratings-wise with those morning games than they did with the evening game or the night games. So there was nothing in between, right? They would have 9 a.m. and 9 p.m., basically, or 8:30 a.m., 8:30 p.m. So I think there is now a conditioning among many soccer fans, TV heavy soccer fans, that morning is better, and then you get on with your day doing other stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question about is it worth it? You're right, Kartik. It comes down to the individual, and it's one of those things that we all have different tastes. We all have different interests, and there's certain things about sport or teams or players that interest us in different ways. So absolutely, for some fans, they will watch more of the games from the United States or North America, and others will watch it from, you mean, Europe. Others will watch it from South America or Africa, around the world. We have so many choices of games to watch. On a typical year, there are more than 3,000 soccer games that are either televised or streamed. 3,000. So there's plenty of choice. And for me, it's hard. I mean, it's my job and it's my work, and I love it. It's my passion. But it is one of those things that sometimes you have to try to really not get burned out, and just kind of, you mean, sometimes I watch games when it's convenient to me rather than going out of my way to watch a game. You mean, so sometimes if I've got a break in the afternoon for a couple of hours, I'll watch two games at once, or other times, you mean, if there's a big game on at night, I'll watch that. But it is interesting too. I mean, we did a poll on World Soccer Talk on Twitter. And we asked our followers on Twitter, how much are you looking forward to the new MLS season? Interestingly, 34% said not interested. 23% said somewhat interested. 14% said interested. And then as far as very interested, it was 27%. So it's kind of, you mean, the interested level is the lowest number. The highest number is not interested. And then the second highest is very interested. So it is very split. And again, too, I think for a lot of listeners, it's if you have a team that's local to you, it's easier to get excited about it. If you don't have a team that's local to you, you mean what's the hook? What is the interest and attachment to watching the league when you can watch any league from around the world or any team from around the world just as easily, if sometimes even more easily? So, yeah, definitely it'll be interesting to watch and see how things go.
Although in my case, strangely enough, there's a team playing 10 minutes away from me, and I have no interest in that team, and I still have interest in a USL team, granted a USL team I once worked for, which is 45 miles down the road. So sometimes, right, you know, having a team next to you isn't necessarily the team you doesn't pique your interest if you already have an attachment to another team locally, which I guess is a South Florida phenomenon. It might be true in some other markets too, though.
All right, Kartik, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up, actually, before we get into that too, we've had a really good debate on worldsoccertalk.com in the comments section of last week's podcast about the pros and cons of the NFL draft system and how it allegedly Miami Dolphins owner Stephen Ross, who we talked about in the news segment, talking about International Champions Cup and also Relevant and basically winning the bid for the UEFA Champions League rights, how Stephen Ross, the Miami Dolphins owner, offered allegedly the coach of the Dolphins $100,000 per game to lose in order for them to get the number one draft pick. And that started up a huge debate about that, and in relation to soccer also, as far as whether the draft is something in soccer, whether it makes sense or not, to reward the team that comes in last place with the first draft pick. You mean it just
that's one of the reasons I can't watch American closed league sports. I think it's the dumbest thing ever, are the drafts. And they're actually, not only is it anti-competitive in that it rewards the worst team, but I think it also is a effectively a weight suppression technique, which forces players, instead of competing for on the open market for teams to bid for them, forces them to sign a contract with whoever drafts them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's definitely been a great discussion from this past week, and I'm sure too on the podcast section of worldsoccertalk.com in the comments there, there'll be some more good debates coming up in this next 7 days. Now, U.S. men's national team, we talked about this on the last episode, talking about kind of the pros and cons of how well the team's been doing, but also specifically about the broadcasting of these games and how ESPN, CBS, and Fox were so different in their coverage. Jake says, I've got a thought experiment for you, Kartik and Chris. What if Paramount Plus got to do the games where the U.S. might play well, and Fox or ESPN got the road games? Now, it's interesting because I mean, there's probably a couple of different ways you can look at this in terms of what Jake is offering as far as a thought experiment. To me, what it says to me, Kartik, it might be different for you, but what it says to me is that how about Fox or ESPN getting the road games? And oftentimes those games are harder, and oftentimes in those types of games, it's more likely that the U.S. may not play as well or may even lose. So having Fox Sports cover the U.S. men's national team in a game where the performance is lackluster, not living up to our expectations, and then Fox having to broadcast and commentate and analyze that, I'm not sure if they're up for it. On the other hand, Paramount Plus has had, other than the CONCACAF Nations League and some other big games, for the most part, Paramount Plus has had the games where the U.S. hasn't played that well. You look at Canada, you look at some of the other games too, and they've been really enthusiastic going into a game, and oftentimes at halftime and post-match are kind of scratching their head going, we can play so much better. What about you, Kartik? What was your thought experiment on this one? What did you think when Jake said this? Did you take it on a different path?
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I thought it might go. Was thinking that what happens if Fox, in particular, have to be more critical because the U.S. is consistently losing these away games. Although, truthfully, Fox has had its share of games where the U.S. has not performed well over the course of the last couple of cycles. What happens if Paramount Plus gets all of the games where the U.S. is winning 3-0 at home? So that's I think it goes kind of in the direction you talked about, and it might maybe changes the way we view the pundits. I think ESPN, generally the presentation is consistent, but it might be very, very different because the view that Lawless is very cheery and positive is not one I share. I actually, again, would stress that when the U.S. doesn't play well, he's all over them. Probably more than anyone is all over them outside of Herc Gomez and Seb Salazar, in the mainstream press. Now, granted, when the U.S. play well, he's more rah-rah USA than anyone else. But I think we would see a different Lawless. Now, what would we see from Rob Stone if the U.S. were covering, if Fox were covering away matches? That's a big question, right? But I think with Strong and Holden, they're very, very dialed in, and I think they would be pretty critical, as they have been in match at times. Stu Holden's been very critical at times.
Yeah, it's important to note here too that Paramount Plus has the rights to the U.S. games, the away games, except for the Mexico game, and that's why Fox and ESPN have shared a lot of the actual home games too, as far as that home coverage. I think the next game that's coming up is the USA against Panama at the end of March, and that one's on Fox, I believe, on that one. But yeah, no, the thing about Lawless, Kartik, is interesting because the next comment is from Greg. Greg says, regarding Lawless, Rob Stone definitely loves to egg him on, and they are way too bro-y. But don't forget that Abdo hosted him for a season or two on Fox for Bundesliga matches. My memory is a bit fuzzy, but while he was definitely a little bit less Lawless with her hosting, he often tried to be the clown. You could sort of see her being dismissive, which is funny given how she eggs on Carragher and Michael Richards on the Champions League coverage. And what I would say, Kartik, is your previous comment too about Lawless being, when it needs to be critical and he needs to be kind of analytical and needs to be talking about how disappointed he is with the U.S. performances, I still think it's over the top and I still think it feels fake. It feels inauthentic. It feels that he's putting on a show. Now, at the heart of his analysis, he's right in terms of, the U.S. can be doing better, but the lack of even kind of actually analytical description of what specifically they need to be doing is not there. He's disappointed. He wants the US to win. He's USA through and through. There's no doubt. But I just feel that when he is being critical, it feels fake, because oftentimes when he's being positive, it feels fake. It doesn't feel like the real him. It's just him putting on a show.
And it's an extreme.
He's an actor.
Right. It's two extremes, right? There's not any kind of like moderate analysis. Hey, they're losing, but they're playing well. And this is what's going wrong type of thing. Or they got unlucky on this set piece. There's not much of that. I agree with that. And in fact, Lawless has shown he can be very analytical when he's been in the studio for Bundesliga games, as mentioned, and Champions League back in the day, where because he was a central defender, sometimes he'd make some very good points about central defenders being pulled out of position and maybe a foul in the area, that sort of thing. So he's capable of it. But you're right, with the U.S., because he's USA through and through, he's emotional, kind of like a fan. If they're down 1-0 at halftime, that was garbage, that was terrible, we need subs. And then if they're up 1-0, oh, that was great, this shows how talented we are, blah, blah, blah. So that's a good point, Chris. I mean, when I say he's critical, I guess he's critical in a knee-jerk way, like a fan would be, when the U.S. isn't playing well.
Yeah, overall, I would say that his tactical analysis is lacking. And I think that's one of the reasons why you get more of the clown aspect, more of the acting aspect, where you get him kind of either being hot or kind of over the top negative, just all out there, because it does mask some of his lack of tactical reasoning or analysis, really. And I think what Greg's comment too, saying about Lallis, about when he was on the Bundesliga coverage, he seemed kind of boring at that point. He didn't really offer much analysis that was like, wow, that's a really, really good observation. It's all about, with Lallis, set plays. You mean those types of things where it's like, yeah, okay, we can see that as the viewer. We understand that. We realize that. But don't go on about it, because that's all you have at times. But I think he's got I think he could be much better than what he is. But what he is also attracts viewers. So whether you love him or you hate him, we all love to talk about him. It's not like we ignore him or he's always out there. But oftentimes, because he is front and center on Fox's coverage, and Rob Stone kind of lays up, you mean, kind of the ball, and Lallis takes it and runs with it or hits it. All right, next up, Dave. Dave says, interesting to hear Kartik's take on the U.S. men's national team. Good points about overall talent being less than the hype. That said, I'm with Mercator in thinking U.S. men's national team is underperforming. Disappointing that there is no impetus to see a manager upgrade. U.S. men's national team and Mexico are both lucky CONCACAF is weak this cycle. Chris goes on to talk about Scottish football. He says, I watched the Old Firm derby between Celtic and Rangers last week, and the coverage provided by CBS Sports Network was excellent. It is great to see this derby finally getting the level of coverage with both pre- and post-match shows that it deserves. When it comes to John Strong and Stu Holden, I really think that they need to leave Fox in order for us to get the best out of them in terms of analysis. If WarnerMedia gets the MLS or the US men's national team rights in 2023, I would expect them to make a pitch to both Strong and Holden to be the lead commentary team. And I think that's a really good point there, Kartik. The tough thing, though, is World Cup. You want to do the World Cup, right? You don't want to miss out on doing the World Cup in 2026.
I think Fox might hire them as freelance if that happens. I believe, to follow up on Chris's comment here, I believe if WarnerMedia does get the rights, John Strong and Stu Holden would both be under very strong consideration. I mean, they would be at the top of any list that Turner would go after, Turner WarnerMedia. Obviously, Holden's already worked there during Champions League, so they could work out an arrangement, I'm sure. Because as Fox has less and less of the club game, I think Fox has to allow for talent leaving and then potentially coming back to them for summer tournaments.
Yeah, and we've seen that too with Kate Abdo. When she was still at Fox, she was working for Turner, doing the Champions League coverage, even though she was a Fox employee. And we saw that with Moadu, who also was doing Turner and now is doing a lot of CBS. So I'm not sure if Mo is freelance or a Fox employee, but there definitely seems to be kind of a willingness for Fox to go ahead and ship some of that talent out to different places if and when need be. And that could be a deal that maybe Fox does with Turner or Fox does with CBS Sports, where they work out some type of agreement that's that fits both of them. But yeah, no, definitely good points there too. And I agree 100% with Chris when he says that John Strong and Stu Holden need to leave Fox in order for us to get the best out of them in terms of analysis. But MLS season starting up in a couple of weeks, and that's their bread and butter. Who knows how much longer they're going to have those types of games on Fox too. So a lot of it depends on Major League Soccer rights, which we should know by the end of next month where those go to for next year. If Fox misses out on a lot of that, then you mean that could be the last kind of the last nail in the coffin for you mean, so to speak, in quotation marks, for some broadcasters or talent, where they might think, okay, enough's enough, all right, it's time for me to look elsewhere. Next up, Tim has some feedback on Peacock, and he says, one aspect of Peacock's coverage of the Premier League that you seem to gloss over is the inability to go to the beginning of a game once it is in progress. I find that incredibly frustrating, as if for whatever reason I'm unable to watch from the start, I'm forced to either miss part of the game or wait until sometime after the game has finished. On the NBC channels, I can record and start at the beginning when I want. So this is a good point there from Tim. It is a developing story because it looks like full DVR controls are now available in Peacock for their Olympics coverage. So even if you join a program late and it's still live, you can go back and rewind it to kind of go back to the beginning, as well as fast forward and rewind live coverage. So that looks like it's in play, which means that it may be likely that those might be available for Premier League matches too. And depending on what device you use, I think with Roku from this week, from watching some games on Peacock, actually, was it Roku or was it Apple TV? One of the devices, it seems to be working where you can actually, in Premier League matches, rewind it.
So this is incredibly frustrating because, again, ESPN Plus with the Bundesliga and with La Liga, I have unlimited controls. I can go back and watch things that I may have missed or want to watch again. I can go back and do what I need to do. And then with one click, I'm back live. So this is something that NBC's got to get right, in my opinion. And it's encouraging to hear that they have.
Yeah, it looks like
with the Olympics.
Yeah, it looks like they're heading in the right direction. I think it looks like they're making a lot of big changes. And we'll get to the bottom of this in terms of finding out all the bells and whistles and if we can actually experience those on Premier League matches. So I'm sure we'll be reporting on that in the near future. Dave says, in regards to Peacock is crushing it on the Winter Olympics. I found Peacock's 2021 Summer Olympics coverage unwatchable. Peacock now includes almost all functionality that was in the NBC Sports app for the 2021 Olympics. Night and day, as those it's run by a different company. I was already satisfied with the Peacock for the Premier League, but I'm happy to read it's better and meeting others' expectations. One caution is that Peacock is very aggressive with ads during any down moments in Olympics coverage. For example, a skier takes out a gate and officials are resetting it. 15-second commercial, then cut right back as next skier is about to start. Same thing I'm seeing with Liga MX recently. Perhaps a harbinger of more ads during Premier League games when there are injuries or VAR, etc. I hope not. I hope not. I seriously do.
No, the Peacock thing is. I give them credit. They've even during Premier League matches, they've already kind of maximized the ability to run ads in a way that I don't think either.
ESPN
Paramount Plus or ESPN Plus have done to this point. Yeah, sorry, I lost my train.
Yeah. Well, ESPN Plus, sometimes it is weird that you'll see a message on the screen that says commercial break in progress or something like that, and then so sometimes I wonder if it's a advertiser who's bought the rights to show that commercial on television but not on streaming. And Paramount Plus is always see the same commercials. You mean it's always commercial loaded, as is Peacock, but But yeah, I think Peacock's done, in terms of that, in terms of rating on that side, a very good job as far as monetizing the games that they have. And they have ad-free versions too. So that's always an option if you don't like ads. Just pay a little bit more. I think Peacock gets $4.99 a month for got commercials now and again, or I think it's $9.99 for ad-free. Last but not least, there's some feedback here, Kartik, on Taylor Twellman, and you mentioned in the beginning of this podcast talking about Bundesliga coverage, and Ra pointed out something too that he saw, he or she saw. Ra says, the Dortmund Leverkusen game coverage last week was great. I have criticized Taylor Twellman in the past for being annoyed by talking too much, but I have only compliments for him on this game. His comments were on point and he did not overdo it. I wonder if the issue is the audience. He might correctly assume that not too many casual fans are watching a Bundesliga match on ESPN Plus. You have to be knowledgeable to know when to tune in to the best match of the week. Also, no need to explain basic stuff to connoisseurs. So I think those are good points too, because I think the stereotype of Taylor Twellman is that he's the guy that commentates MLS games. And with MLS games comes a lot of baggage. So for fans that hate MLS, don't like MLS, don't like the closed system, and he's connected to that in terms of he's kind of, I mean, ESPN's number one co-commentator for MLS. So sometimes fans of South American soccer, European soccer, even African soccer might think, when they hear the words Taylor Twellman, they think MLS. And sometimes I think that those negative connotations are put on Taylor because he does MLS games. But as you know, and as I know, he does a lot of other games. He does, I mean, FA Cup games. He's done, I think in the past, he's done League Cup games, Euro 2020, and of course, the Bundesliga too. So it's good to have him on doing different games. And I think he's smart enough to know who his audience is and how to adjust his commentary style to that audience. Because it is different. The people watching an MLS game or a US men's national team game are very, very different than someone that's watching the Dortmund Leverkusen game like yourself, Kartik.
Yeah, and this is something that I really hate about the way a lot of these people who don't like MLS or don't like MLS, American soccer, but they watch the national team, right? A lot of these people are crazy about the national team, but they don't watch MLS, have perceived Twellman as a, quote, MLS guy, when in fact, I would put his knowledge of European football, at least some leagues, the Premier League and the Bundesliga, maybe less so La Liga, up against just about anyone in the U.S., so it's a weird thing. I mean, he polarizes opinion, and I really cannot understand why. I think he's a guy at the very top of his profession, and there are people, a lot of people who have agendas or lazy analysis, and they kind of apply this to him.
Yeah, I think for the MLS, I mean, MLS is better because of him. So, and him and John Champion together doing MLS games is great for ESPN. Because I have to think, I mean, if it wasn't Taylor Twellman doing the MLS co-commentary on ESPN, who else is there that could fit into that slot? Who could be analytical? Who could be interesting to listen to? Who could offer some really good points? And Herc Gomez, I would rate up highly, but as a co-commentator, not so much. I mean, his best place is in the studio. Even going back to what you said at the beginning of the podcast with Arlo White, I think Arlo is better in the studio than doing commentary. That's my own personal opinion.
In fact, I mean, the thing that everybody loves Rebecca Lowe, but I actually like when Arlo White hosts, when he's the presenter, as he is this week.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, we have both of them. We have, you mean, kind of them sharing that role. And, you mean, when she's not available, which is oftentimes on kind of those Monday games or the Friday games, to have someone like Arlo. But obviously Arlo lives in the UK. But in this case, for going back to ESPN, is that there's not a lot of really, really good US co-commentators. And we saw that with the US coverage from ESPN, Fox, and CBS. Casey Keller's good, but I think Casey would be better on Bundesliga games. I'm trying to think of other people. I mean, Stu Holden is good, but could he be as good doing MLS games for ESPN? Obviously, he does ESPN games for Fox games, yeah, MLS games for Fox, but I don't think he's. I don't know. Taylor Twellman, I would say, is much, much better than Stu Holden right now in terms of analysis. And I think Stu's got a ways to go, even though he is good and one of the rising stars at Fox Sports. All right, lots of opinions offered, and these are personal opinions too. These are things that we share from watching Kartik. The other day, I tried to, when we talked about podcast numbers, we had, you know, almost 1,400 podcast episodes, which is crazy. But I tried to figure out how many games a season I watch, how many games a year I watch, and it's over 1,000. Because I was figuring out how many games on a typical day am I watching. Sometimes it's 3 to 4. Sometimes it's more than that. Sometimes I have two games on at once. And I did the numbers. And I was like, it's over 1,000 games. So these types of things are things that we're sharing based on our own personal opinions of watching the game, watching over 1,000 games a year out of the 3,000 that are available. So I'm sure that not everyone agrees with us. But whether you do or don't, or if you got something you want to ask us, we'd love to hear from you. You can always reach out to us via email through web@worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter @worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. Next week, we've got a huge, 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 huge announcement from World Soccer Talk. So I'm not going to give any clues or anything like that, but definitely stay tuned to both the podcast and the website and social media. I've got some huge news to share next week, so stay tuned for that. Kartik, listeners, where can they contact you via Twitter?
It's KKFLA737, and stay tuned for that huge announcement from World Soccer Talk. Also, understand there will be a major announcement from the Seattle Sounders next week, for those who may not be paying that close attention to MLS in the preseason. So look out for that as well.
All right. I got to talk about the Seattle announcement. Do you have any idea what it is, Kartik? Do you have any intel? You don't have to tell me if you do.
I don't have any. I've tried to get some intel. I don't have it other than being told it's going to be really big. So I don't know if it's some sort of big shirt sponsor or if they've got a DP coming in, although I would think that would leak, right? And I we have a couple of days until that announcement, so I'm still trying to find out what it is. But it's been built up, and because it's Seattle, and for those of you who don't maybe know kind of the history of Seattle, is not like some other MLS teams that constantly builds up, oh, we got this huge announcement, and then the huge announcement is, we're doing a contest on Twitter. No, they're very judicious about how and when they tease big news. So I'm expecting it to be something very big.
Yeah, see, when I saw the press release that mentioned that they're going to have a big announcement, the way I took it was it was going to be bad news. It was going to be something serious, something kind of like just, it's whatever it is. I have no idea what it is.
Ownership change, some sort of.
Yeah, something that could be like, wow, okay, is that good news or not? I mean, that's just my take on when I read it. I guess I'm reading into it. World Soccer Talk's news is going to be positive. I can say that. But Seattle Sounders, yeah, I'm curious to see what it is.
That's possible, that because like I said, the reason why it's caught my attention and I've started calling people to try and find out what it is because they don't do that often as an organization, Seattle. They're very, very judicious right. in how they tease things. So, yeah, it very well could be something very bad that they're getting out there. So we'll see.
Yeah, and don't forget too, Kartik's got a lot of Twitter spaces happening too, if you do follow him, as well as an interesting discussion from this past week about Brighton and Hove Albion.
Yes. For those who haven't paid attention to my Twitter, this happened 3 months ago or 4 months ago when a bunch of US fans, MLS fans said they had seen Brighton play and the top teams in MLS, they would be better than Brighton. And Chris Kessel and I jumped in, and then it became a big to-do, huge thing on Twitter to the point where I muted the discussion, and then when I unmuted it, I had, like, there were, like, 100 mentions. And so 3 months later, because The Athletic has done this really cool thing with sort of heat maps and possession that they unveiled this week, and I saw outside the top teams, Brighton keeps the ball in more dangerous areas than anyone. in the Premier League, other than maybe Leeds, right? Leeds would be the other one, but we know of Bielsa's reputation. I just brought the issue back up again, and this time the MLS fans, for the most part, were disarmed and didn't get involved, and it just got a lot of engagement from people who were saying, "Yeah, how could anyone think that Brighton was MLS teams were better than Brighton?"
Well, that's the thing, though, too. I mean, just one more thing about that that graphic that came out from the Athletic this week, and it was a graphic really, really well done, very simple, that showed the top teams, or the teams in the Premier League, and which parts of the pitch they have the most touches in compared to the opposition, and which parts of the pitch do they control? And you did see some teams like Burnley. Basically, almost the entire pitch was kind of possession wise was on their opponents, not in their own possession. I would say, though, however, Kartik, I think it's misleading the whole kind of premise of that graphic, because it was based on number of touches compared to the opposition in each part of the pitch. And as a fan myself of Swansea City, who are a possession-based team, and actually I think in the last few months, the top three teams in world soccer with the best possession stats, I think number one was, I think it was Barcelona. I think Barcelona was number one. Number three was PSG, which PSG you can imagine too in terms of Ligue 1 kind of just really monopolizing that league. Barcelona still kind of being kind of still playing that type of style for the most part. Number two was Swansea City. And Swansea City, even though we have possession, and this could go for any team, even though that you have a lot of possession, that doesn't necessarily mean that you are better than the opposition. It just means that you're maintaining possession of the ball. You might not be doing much with it. So I think it'd be interesting to see what Swansea's graphic would look like, because it probably would show that they kind of have control in almost all areas of the pitch, except probably in their own penalty area defensively, or even in the penalty area, they might have kind of a lot of possession there too from playing the style of play that they do. But that was my take when I saw that graphic, but it is interesting, and it's definitely worth seeking out. All right, listeners, thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday, as well as on Mondays we have the episodes with Kyle Fansler, and oftentimes either interviews or discussions about big topics. Every episode is released on Amazon Music, Spotify, Pandora, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and WorldSoccerTalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media, and we'd really appreciate it if you give us a review on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts. In Kartik, heading into another week, a big week from football around the world, what should the listeners do, and what are you going to do?
Enjoy your football.